1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
It is Monday, Hoopalooza 2015 in the books. Also, the first scrimmage. Rather than to hear me yap so much, we're going to bring you a lot of interviews from those. I'm going to have interviews today with the two Hoopalooza speakers, Scott Edgar and Marcus Brown. Also, I'll get some comments from head coach Matt McMahon. But before we get to all that, Mitch Stewart is going to bring us up to date with Saturday's scrimmage. Tell us about some of the things he liked, some things that they're going to be working on this week, and that is all coming up. So hang on. Going to have back-to-back interviews in just a bit on those. A little bit of news to tell you about. Marshall County's Quinn Eaton shot an even par 71. He was the boys' individual champion Saturday at the Tillman Invitational at Paxton Park. He led his team to victory with a 312. That's six shots up from Graves County's second place finish. Murray High was seventh at 352. Callaway County eighth at 357. James Boone tied for ninth with the Tigers with an 81. Peyton Carter of Henderson County shot a 71. She won the girls' medalist honors in that tournament. But Marshall County's Bailey Tyree was just two strokes back, and she led her team to the team title with a 354. That was 11 strokes better than McCracken County. Murray High finished third at 371, led by Sarah McDowell's 79. Some not-so-good news out of Austin Peay. Their baseball coach, and that's a longtime baseball coach, Gary McClure, resigned after being arrested. Sort of an embarrassing situation for him. After he contacted a detective in a prostitution ring, he was arrested at a hotel in Clarksville. He's facing charges of patronizing prostitution. Been the head coach there since 1988. Derek Dunbar has been named interim coach at the university. Kentucky.com reports UK linebacker Jason Hatcher will be suspended for the first two games of the season for violating team rules. Hatcher missed UK football media day and was said to be working to complete some academic work. He did practice with the team later Friday and on Saturday. Hatcher was listed as the number one strong side linebacker on the final spring depth chart. And after separate practices to open fall camp, the University of Louisville football team will put the entire team together today. The newcomers and veterans practice separately for the first four practices prior to the 2015 season opener against Auburn. They finished Sunday evening with the newcomers going through a 19-period workout on the practice field in shoulder pads and helmets on Sunday afternoon. The vets had a spirited workout, but they go all pads today. Didn't really have anything good to tell you about the Cardinals game from yesterday, but they took two of three. As long as they keep doing that, things would be fine. The Brewers avoided a three-game sweep with a 5-4 win over the Cardinals, and even this one looked like a Cardinal win. St. Louis down early. Matt Carpenter jacked a three-run homer for the Redbirds to put them up 4-3, but then Jonathan Broxton blew the lead in the eighth when he gave up a two-run home run, and the Cards lost 5-4. They still have the best record in baseball. They're back at Busch tomorrow night against the Pirates. The trash talk has already started between myself and a Pirates fan superfan Shirley Martin. Carlos Martinez against Jeff Locke in tomorrow night's game. Of course, we'll have them all for you on 1340 WNBS. I'll take a break. When I come back, it'll be Mitch Stewart followed by the basketball interviews I have for you. It's all coming up next.
Celebration of the second class of the Cardinals Hall of Fame on Saturday, August 15th, when the Cardinals host the Marlins. 25,000 fans, 16 and older, receive a collectible 2015 Cardinals Hall of Fame inductees plaque honoring Curt Flood, Bob Forrest, George Kissel, and Ted Simmons, courtesy of Edward Jones. That's Saturday, August 15th, the Cardinals and the Marlins, and the Cardinals Hall of Fame inductees plaque giveaway. Tickets available at cardinals.com/promotions. Cardinals baseball. Tradition meets today.
With Coach Mitch Stewart after scrimmage number one, I'm just going to tell you what I saw in the booth. Looked like the defense was a little better today. Now let's get your look.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to tell you, they ran around. They tackled the football well. It's like I told somebody earlier, you know, they said, were you expecting that, you know, and what have you seen from them the whole week? And I said, well, I hadn't seen anything. Everybody looks good when they're tapping somebody on the hip, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And just really liked the way that they flew around and tackled the football, especially out in space. I thought we did pretty good. Now, there's a couple of breakdowns and fundamental things that they'll get cleaned up. But overall, you know, I mean, that was 130 snaps or so is what I planned on getting. And they held up well for 130 snaps. So really excited about that.
And isn't that
quite a few more than we usually see on a first scrimmage.
It is, but I wanted my mentality is going out here and get the best evaluation while they're the freshest instead of trying to build up to it. Let's go on and try to get as many snaps out of them as we can now, and then if we need to, we can tailor it once we're getting closer to the season because you know, the best thing we got going on right now, Neil, is we've got a lot of competition at a lot of different spots, at pretty much all different spots. Even at the quarterback job, you know, the backup competition right now is probably one of the most intense we have. And I was really hoping that one of those guys would separate themselves. And so I needed to get as many snaps as we could in on those guys so that we could get as many evaluations as we could.
I know Mark Dodson was in, didn't carry it much though, but was in for several plays. Do you plan on looking at him carrying a little bit more maybe the next scrimmage?
Yeah, obviously we do. You know, with some of the things that we're doing, you know, our install offensively is very, very elementary right now. So a lot of the things that we're doing right now, it's about getting the ball on the perimeter, you know, and trying to spread out a defense and so on and so forth. So that was probably the reason why you saw the quarterbacks throw all the screens and then quick games and all of that kind of stuff. But obviously we brought him in here so that we could be more effective, you know, at the running back spot and be more productive at the running back spot. And, you know, and he's getting to it. You know, when he first came in here now, he was as out of shape as they come. And so we've kind of started building him up a little bit, building his wind. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing him get out and go.
Did I see Zeke Pike line up at fullback?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
That's what it looked like. I saw 17.
Yeah, we're going to move him around a little bit, do some different things with him. He's still going to play quarterback for us. He's still going to do some things like that. He's just such a big, good athlete. And it's like I told him, I said, you're not going to sit over on the sideline with me while I'm, you know, signaling plays. You're going to be doing something. So.
And he's open to doing that, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was awesome. Yeah, he just wants to get on the field.
Between this week and next week, what do you think you'll look at working at the most?
Well, you know, I think that there were a lot of good situations that we put the kids in. You know, I think there's a lot of learning. I mean, golly, man, we had sacks in the red zone offensively. We had turnovers down in the red zone offensively. Our goal line defense was not very good at all. I think we were probably close to about 100% when we went down there and started it on the three. So, you know, we've got to tighten up down there when we get a chance. You know, obviously you're not supposed to be able to throw a slant on the goal line.
Right.
You know, so there's some things like that that we've got to get cleaned up. And then on the flip side of that, I think offensively, tempo-wise, we're not there when we want to go tempo. You know, we don't know how yet to exchange the tempos and slow down and then speed up and then slow down. So, you know, overall, I really feel good about this scrimmage, about the tape we're about to watch. Now, it's going to be about 3 hours worth of it. But I feel good about what we'll get to see.
Mitch, I appreciate it. I really enjoyed watching today, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Coach Matt McMahon, the head coach, a 2-1 record in Canada. But that trip was not about the wins and losses, as you said. Looked like you got accomplished what you wanted to get accomplished there, Matt.
It was an awesome trip. Really talked to our guys about three things. One, I wanted them to have an experience of a lifetime because they only get to go on one of those trips once in their career. Two, I really wanted them to get to partake in the team building exercises. And then third, I wanted them to really start to form an identity of what this team's going to be about. And it ended up being perfect because we got our butts kicked in one game. We won in just a grinded out, tough tournament style game, and then we won comfortably in the final game where we were able to play a bunch of different combinations. And on top of all that, the team building experiences, going on the Montreal jet boat tour was one of a kind, and it's something our guys will remember forever.
Oh, that looked like a ton of fun. Now tonight's a special night too, and the Hoopalooza, when it first started, I wasn't really sure if this was something that could continue annually, but it's something that's really taken off, and tonight's special too.
Well, Coach Brohm deserves all the credit in the world. He had this vision for wanting to, you know, reunite all the former players and coaches with the unique fan base that we have here at Murray State, and it's really taken off, and it's an opportunity to honor the unbelievable tradition of Murray State, all the championships, all the great players and coaches who have come through the program, and then reunite them with all the fans who are still here that cheered them on as long as 50 years ago. So it's really a special night for the program.
And it really links a family of players. I was telling Marcus, everyone has someone who they've looked up at in the rafters and go, I wonder what they're like. This is the event where they can meet that guy. Some of your players, they could be here and like, man, there's Marcus Brown. I've never met Marcus Brown, one of the greatest stars in EuroLeague history. Jerseys hanging in the rafters. It really makes a family out of them, too, doesn't it?
It is. And the one thing I'm really excited about is Jeffrey Moss was able to hang around and stay with us this weekend to be a part of it. And I really wanted him to see what this event is about as we look to him to be a leader on next year's team. And now he can come back and visit with Isaiah Cannon, who he was able to play with, and then meet also as far back as Benny Purcell from the early 1950s, whose jersey hangs in the rafters. So it's just a special weekend, really unique to Murray State. There are not many places that could pull something off like this.
It is work, but it's all worth it, isn't it?
It is, and to see the fans really get to that Popeye Jones that they cheered for 20 years ago and have followed his career through the NBA and now as an NBA assistant coach to get to visit with him tonight at dinner or to be in his golf group tomorrow at the country club. It's really a special, special event.
Matt, I appreciate it. I'll catch up with you later.
All right, Neil. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. We're chatting with Marcus Brown. This is the night of Hoopalooza. And Marcus, I know you've had a lot of special memories here, even after basketball, with the Hall of Fame, jersey retirement. But something about Hoopalooza, it's kind of a different atmosphere, isn't it? Tell us about that.
Well, I just think that with all the rich tradition and all the guys that have come along, past and present, this is just another way to extend our family. Another way to show that family type atmosphere, the support that this community gives to this university and the players, and just kind of a way for us as players and coaches to kind of give back to and just kind of get to see a different side from a humanitarian side, because sometimes practice, everybody doesn't, they don't get to be in the practice and stuff like that. So, to hear some of the stories and just to catch up with everyone is, because Murray is like, for a lot of us, is home, and then it's our second home.
Right.
So,
and it's family because of the fans, but also the players. Up and down, you get to have a connection with some of the younger players who's like, man, I've seen Marcus Brown's jersey up there. I'm going to get to meet him tonight. And then you've had that same thing with some of the players you've seen.
Yeah.
Jerseys hanging in the rafter.
Yeah. I mean, Crittenden and Jeff and Pop and Purcell, just to go back, it just shows you how much Murray was a special place, and the people that I always pay homage to, the people that came before me, and just to be able to, to be asked to do this, is a feat within itself. To have my jersey hanging in the rafters, it's a blessing, I just hope and, I always pray that I hope that, my parents are proud of me, not just from a basketball standpoint, but just from a standpoint of being able to do things the right way.
A friend of mine is a sports writer who was also a student here, and everyone has the player that was the player for their era, and you were his. He walked into my studio one day. You gave me a jersey from your EuroLeague, and he saw that, and his jaw dropped. And said, is that Marcus Brown's jersey? Yes, it is. He goes, I am so jealous of you right now. I mean, you were his guy. Everyone has that one hero, and you were his. He has to work tonight. Can't be here. He's in South Carolina. So he is doubly jealous. But sometimes you don't really realize the impact you have on young men, young women. But my gosh, you're his hero to this day, and the guy's knocking on 30 years old.
Yeah. Well, that's the the beauty of sports. It's tied into life skills, and then people can kind of live through you. I always try to take time to you know, meet people and try to, you know, sign autographs and just do things the right way because you never know who's watching.
Sure.
And then the impact that you would have on another person because maybe you dressed well or you spoke well during that time and that was, you know, you were able to help that person get over something that day. Or, you know, they were just able to enjoy sports.
Right,
sports that day. So, but I'm just tickled to death, and you know, like I said, I'm just truly thankful and blessed to have had the opportunity that I had, and you know, Coach Edgar and Coach Roth believing in me and recruiting me, and you know, bringing me here. You know, I mean, I started to research Murray State, but I still didn't know a lot about it. But I just knew that. You know, this coaching staff was giving me an opportunity to get an education and to play basketball.
That's my next question was Scott Edgar. How did that all come to be? How did Marcus Brown end up in a Gracier uniform?
Well, Scott was at Arkansas, and they were recruiting a guy by the name of Corliss Williamson.
Oh yeah,
and. We would see them around our AAU practice, not really, well, not around, but I mean on the circuit.
Sure.
And they would come in with those big Razorback jogging suits, and man, we were like, you know, I was like, man, they're here to see Corliss, then I'm about to try to do something so they can see me.
Right,
you
sure.
know? And just had a great high school coach that was, you know, a fundamentally sound guy. And so Scott ended up, you know, getting a job at Murray, and I had, you know, a couple good summers with the Wings. I still was really raw, and he had Kenny on the staff, and he and Kenny kind of, you know, started calling, and that track record around Arkansas and things like that. We had won a state championship, and I was like, man, so, you know, Murray State, you know. Like, man, where's Murray State? You know, and then, you know, the whole Jeff Martin, Cherry Valley, Arkansas. And I was like, man. It's like, okay. So we just kind of, you know, Kenny stayed on me. You know, Scott, they was Arkansas. And, I mean, it just kind of was a match made in heaven, man. You know, it was really – but that's kind of how I ended up here from Corliss Williamson with the Arkansas connection and then Scott staying on me and Kenny staying on me. And, you know, I just woke up one night and I was like, man, I'm going to go to Murray State, you know. And I go around there and tell my mom. I'm like, Mom, I made my college decision. I'm going to Murray State. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. She just wakes up like, yeah, whatever, and goes back to sleep on it. So the next time I have a game, I had a high school game at the time, you know, and we're tied up. I get fouled, and I play terrible. So come to find out, Scott comes to that game. I played horrible. So he ends up walking out and was like, oh, he's – crap, he's playing terrible. He walks out, and Kenny ends up calling him later on and tells him that I win the game at the free throw line with no time left. So, you know, so Murray almost was and almost wasn't. So, you know, that's kind of how I ended it.
What about, and I know we have to consider probably our audience here, your favorite Scott Edgar story. I know there's I'm not asking for the best one. I'm asking for one that you can tell me.
All right. Okay. Without bleeping, without the bleeps.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
PG-13. We can go to the edge there. Man.
All right.
I've been to Scott's practices before.
That's why my jokes are not going to be funny because I can't actually tell them. I would say. All right. We were getting ready for, I think, Tennessee State, and. Antoine Teague was—he wasn't having a real good practice leading up to
right,
and stuff.
Right.
And Antoine, you know, Antoine's—you know—he's trying though. And so, you know, Coach looks over and looks at Coach Roth, and he goes, "Boo!" You know, it's like a Cracker Jack box. you know, I don't know what I'm going to get. I don't know if I'm going to get the prize, the bad toy, the what. I don't know what I'm going to get. Why don't you go over there and wind him up? And so Scott goes over behind him, wind him up like a son. So that was kind of like one of the, you know, but you had to be there to really absorb the story. And probably one of the all-time ones is probably the Bustle story that everybody probably, you know, remembers, and it's kind of a spoiler because that was like one of my ones tonight. But I forget who we were getting ready for, but we were defensively. I mean, we were talking about getting after it, passing lanes the whole 9 yards. And man, Bustle, he's supposed to be our defensive guy. Bustle's lackluster. He's not really, you know, and coach is about had enough, you know, and that wasn't a lie, but, you know, he's had it up to here, and he's ready to explode. So, you know, coach just busts out, you know, he's, Bustle, you know, you can't guard nobody. You can't guard none. You can't do this. You can't do that. Why don't you go up there and guard that horse? And so, Bustle go up there on Racer Arena.
The horse
on Racer Arena, and actually stand in a defensive stand.
Horse didn't score, though, did he? That's
exactly what I was going to tell right here. Yeah. I already had that on Bustle.
So
you're going before me.
And so, you know, so that was, you know, but I mean, you know, probably. I mean, it was Neil. We were, I mean, it's unreal, Neil, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to ask your final question. Do you have any one game you remember? I'm going to tell you my favorite Marcus Brown story in a game, and that was at Louisville. And you remember torching those guys. Mm-hmm. And at some point, one was talking to the other. I don't remember the two players over by us, and he goes, I can't guard that guy. I heard him say that. And that night they could they had really no chance at guarding you. Didn't have a ton of help that night, but I don't remember the final, but you torched them. Almost came close to beating those guys that night.
Yeah. Well, I would probably say senior night, Middle Tennessee. I was close. I think I just went over 2,000 points, but you know, senior night, a lot of emotion. You know, Scott wasn't here, and you know, Coach Roth wasn't here, and you know, it's kind of changing of the guard. But you know, you kind of want to go out with the same guys and stuff like that. You know, no disrespect, you know, to Mark and Tavester, and you know, and but you know, you grow with them.
Sure.
You know, and I was pressing. Oh man, I was trying to do everything, and Middle was kind of trapping and so forth. And we go in at halftime. We're kind of down 7 or 8. And I think I had maybe 9 points. And at that time, I think we were going back and forth, leading scorer in the country, second leading scorer in the country. And, you know, we're talking about OVC championship and stuff. Man, now at senior night, I was pressing. And so I was going in the tunnel. And my dad, I looked at my dad, and he just kind of like, you know, it was like, and he never says anything. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of like, you know, kind of calmed down a little bit. You know, I had all family here and stuff like that. And, we went in there, and Mark kind of gave us a good talking over and stuff. And we came out, and I think I had 28 in the second half.
Yeah.
I think I finished the game with 39. And it was like one of those moments, you know, so But senior night, obviously Louisville, North Carolina, Purdue. I remember being at Eastern though, Neil, and I know he's short on time, but we were at Middle. I mean Eastern, and Marcus Jones was, oh man, he had just gotten eligible and he was coming off, and you know, they call it Death Valley, and we Happy Valley because we would aim to go there and.
Yeah.
You know, make it better. And Jones is just—he has a bum on him. I don't know. We respect our opponent. He has a bum on him. He's not going and stuff. And come over to the huddle, and you know, and just in the moment, he's like, "Yeah, man. You know, stop playing like a boop." You know, and then Scott jumps in the middle of the whole huddle and like, yeah, stop playing like a bull. So everybody, and then we just you know, charge it and just kind of go from there. So, man, it was, those are, the war stories that, a lot of people don't know behind the scenes that, just helped us and kind of went from there.
My final thing, I know Sam Rickman and I did the games, and the one game, I don't remember what it was, maybe your junior, you came up, sauce for the game. I don't know. I think maybe the other game was running along, the game before, women's game maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a good game, and you kind of made it a tradition.
Yeah, I started, yeah.
You started coming up there every game.
I don't know what
And game. You never had another bad game.
Was that my junior year or sophomore year? I think it was
It may have been your sophomore year.
I don't know.
But once you started having good games.
And I came up in the booth, and I was like, oh, man, I got to go see Neil. I got to go. I got to make my way up to the booth. So,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, man. And Scott, where do we go? I think this was my junior year, and we were playing horrible. I think we were 5-4 in the conference or something like that. Just playing horrible, and Scott comes in, and we're practicing it. We're practicing in the morning time.
I've heard those.
So what? That's in the morning time. Yeah, we're practicing in the morning time. You don't like it, you can go home. Man, come in. 5:30? 6?
Yeah, 5:30.
5:30 morning practice. We come in, and man, it was rough. And Boo was going at it, Keita and stuff. And man, next thing you know, man, we run off. 10 in a row, something like that. Come back, tie the conference, and then we just kind of steamroll through the conference and through the tourney and a magical season, what it was, But who knows? Who knew 5:30 in the morning would actually, trigger it? But what kahunas on the coaching staff to go ahead and do that and try to bring us together and. Phenomenal, man.
Marcus, I appreciate the visit. Thanks so much, and looking forward to hearing from you tonight. Okay?
Thanks, Neil.
It is Hoopalooza night, and our special guest tonight is Scott Edgar. My very first game as the play-by-play guy of Murray State basketball was with Scott Edgar. That was my very first contest. And I remember the way things started, Coach. 3-9, get Popeye Jones. But, man, you guys stuck with it, made an adjustment here and there. You end up Ohio Valley Conference champions into the NCAA tournament. What a remarkable first year here at Murray State, and the legend continues to this day.
Well, it's been a while, and the thing I remember about that team, they just bought in. When things weren't going well, they practiced just as hard as we wanted. We kept bringing them to the gym. Maybe enough, maybe too much, maybe not enough. Who knows? But once it kicked in, that team was virtually unbeatable. And we may have the week of the OVC tournament and then on into the game that we played at the University of Arkansas might have been the best week of basketball that we played during the 4 years here, because of course you have Popeye. But with the going 3-9, Frank Allen didn't play in a lot of those games, because if we remember, Frank could practice with us, but Frank did not get eligible until Christmas.
Right.
So and then it was just all brand new.
Oh, sure.
And, but like I said, when it clicked, it steamrolled.
Something about the school that gives you that first chance to be a head coach, and Murray State will always be that first team. What was that like when you realized, my gosh, I'm going to be the head coach at Murray State?
Well, and that was before, and this shows the magnitude of Popeye and Marcus also. That was early 90s, really before the explosion of cable networks.
Right, right.
The only exposure the OVC got before that was they would have a couple midnight games where students dressed up at midnight and you know, legend has it some of the opposing coaches got drunk before the game. never a Murray coach. But that was about the only exposure. So I did not know the magnitude or the greatness of this place. And visited during the summertime in Race Arena. It was hot, muggy, dusty, blah, blah, blah. And Mr. Bill Rayburn, who was kind of hosting me, said, "Coach, just wait till you coach a game in here." And boy, he was so right. And I tell people, I think I've been everywhere except for Duke. But no place is like Race Arena. And I know the players and the coaches now coaching in a much more modern and the center now has a mystique of its own. But if you played or coached in Race for Arena, you're part of college basketball history.
And the legends you coached, starting with Popeye Jones, you brought in Marcus Brown, Vincent Rain, you had Frank Allen on the team there that first season. And I mean some absolutely amazing talent on your basketball teams, Coach.
Well, there was a lot of good players, and that's why we hung banners. Coaches can help players, but players make coaches. And when I look at, you know, how blessed I was my first year as a head coach to have Popeye Jones. I mean, a lot of people never get to the collegiate level to coach, and then I get my first crack, and I've got a pro, and then as soon as he leaves, another pro comes in Marcus. But we had. You know, we had a lot of other people, Vincent and Frank and Cedric, and we had guys that didn't put up stats, but they'd run through the wall. Guys like Matt Harris, guys like Scott Sibbles, Maurice Cannon was a great player,
oh, yeah.
But he just kind of got overshadowed some places.
I know it. Yeah.
I mean, he was having a phenomenal career, and then a guy named Brown comes in, and so. Just a lot of great players came through here during that time, but a lot of great players were here before them and after them too, and that's what makes this place so special, is, you know, players have came and gone, coaches have came and gone, but the program has stayed at a championship level.
One thing about that first NCAA tournament game, it's in Milwaukee at the Bradley Center, and gosh, lo and behold, you play Arkansas. What a coincidence, huh? And I saw three things that day that I have never seen again. First, Arkansas's players came out. They go over the rail. They're getting hugs from Elaine, your wife. That's how – I mean, you guys were family. So I see that. Popeye Jones, when he's taken out of the game at the end, an official stops him, shakes his hand, and pats him on the butt. I've never seen that. And then Nolan Richardson's press conference. I've never seen a winning coach cry after the game. He was heartbroken that he took you out. And I've never forgotten that day, Coach.
Well, that was quite a day. And there's been no other game like that. Coaches have played, you know, assistant coaches since then, but that day stands out. It truly does.
Well, it was fun, and I tell you what, I've told a lot of coaches here. I've seen a lot of games, and I'll tell everyone to their face, the most exciting basketball I've ever seen was when Scott Edgar was the coach, and the teams were at their optimal offensively and defensively. It's never been anything like it in my 50-plus years on this earth, Scott. It's amazing to watch.
I appreciate you saying that. And that gets, you know, it gets back to everybody. And, you know, that those teams had a relationship that they played for each other. And that's something that I preach a lot. Teams can play against each other, and they won't win. Teams that play with each other, they'll win some games, but teams that play for each other, they win championships, and they did. They worked so hard, and they played with such a pace, and they played in front of, you know, fans and enjoyed that pace, and, you know, it surely was a fun time, and like I said, when we got things going to Race Arena, it was virtually, it was a show. It was a show.
One other thing I wanted to mention, that's about the other gentleman who will be speaking tonight, and Marcus Brown. And I remember that first game there at Indiana. You played him, he had 8 points. And I thinking, he might be okay. He might be a pretty decent player. I had no idea what I was looking at. When did you think we might have something special in this kid?
Well, he'd won everywhere he'd been. His high school coach made a statement, he's not going to let you lose. When he came, he would win every wind sprint. He was athletic because he was a 7-foot high jumper, but just his competitiveness. And then as the season went on, it seemed like when things got tough, that's when we would start to call on him, and he would rise to the occasion and make big plays and just. He was coming to practice early. He was staying late. He was just growing up in front of our eyes. And then he made a statement when he went home for the spring. He said, Coach, I'm going to be so good when I come back that you're not going to be able to take me out of the game. And lo and behold, he was.
Wow.
I guess he really, it exploded over the summer. When he came back, he was sophomore of the year in the OVC. At the same time, when there were two other NBA players in the OVC, one in Carlos Rogers, one in Bubba Wells, so he was not doing it at a time that somebody could say, well, the OVC's rebuilding, or the OVC's not as strong as it might have been at some time. He was doing it when there were other phenomenal people in the conference.
Final question. I know we're going to hear from you tonight, but what does it say that it's been over 20 years since you first started here and people still think enough of what you did, what you accomplished, the banners you hung? It means so much to people here. They want to hear from you again more than 20 years later. And I mean, when people found out Scott Edgar's coming, it's like, wow, can't wait to hear from him. That's big time, Coach.
Well, it's very humbling. But at the same time, it's a blessing that I am considered that way. And been a lot of places, but Murray's always Murray.
I have one other question, because fair is fair. I've asked Kenny Roth his favorite Scott Edgar story. It's only fair that I ask Scott Edgar the favorite Kenny Roth story. He's my color analyst, so here's now my chance to have a little ammo with him on the air, Coach.
We might tell that tonight. But him and Scott Sivels always had – I was always known to be wound up.
Yeah.
But those guys added to it because they always found a way to keep me on the edge. Their favorite line was, hey, Coach, did you hear what so-and-so said? And usually so-and-so was an opposing coach, or so-and-so was an opposing player in the conference saying something about us. So they did a good job of keeping me on edge.
I got you. Coach, I appreciate it. Can't wait to hear from you tonight, and I am thrilled to death to have you here.
Thanks.
All right.